that is in no way reassuring, because even a 10%, even a 1%, even a 0.1% chance of something catastrophic happening to the global food system is too high. If you were to get on a plane and the pilot radioed at the beginning and said, oh, and just to let you know, there is a 1%, 10%, 50% chance that this plane could abruptly fall out of the sky, we would not tolerate that level of risk. And I do not think that we should tolerate that level of risk in the Earth system. But it is the case, effectively, implicitly, and I think unbeknownst to many world leaders, it is the case that actually we are currently, as far as we know, tolerating that level of risk in the Earth system.
Well, this big change wouldn't be instant like in the movie The Day After Tomorrow. Do we have guesses on how long collapse would take, how much time there might be for adaptation or migration, if that's necessary, if it tips?
Yeah, so that's quite right. So I think a good thing for those who are listening, an image to have in their mind is a chair. And imagine you're leaning back on that chair. I used to do it at school a lot. And my teachers would tell me off. And you reach a point where you are no longer able to hold yourself in balance as you lean back. That is the tipping point. After that, you cannot help but fall onto the floor on your back. As you're saying with AMOG, the falling process where you lose control and the chair then tips down, for AMOG collapse to play out could take decades. It could take upward of a century. We don't know. Not knowing is highly unreassuring. But we should therefore look at the riskiest case, that it could be a matter of decades, which time this could play out. That would allow for some action to be better adapted. But I really would put AMOC collapse into the category of things that are unmanageable and therefore must be avoided. There isn't much going back from the kind of impact on the food system that's being suggested by the evidence. It wouldn't just be the immediate consequences of that loss of food production. It would then be the knock-on, the cascading consequences. Not just the loss of food, it's then the economic and geopolitical instability, the health effects, the knock-on effects of nature. They will create an impact that is far greater than the sum of its parts. So we've got to make sure that we avoid this unmanageable event. Climate change is not just about the floods in Spain or the hurricanes in America. It is about those things. They are awful. But it is also about the potential for the global food system to be hit by a catastrophic event by this. And this is why scientists have been calling this an emergency and why we must see it as an emergency.
So would the impact of a North Atlantic stoppage be limited to the Atlantic, to North Europe and Scandinavia?
No. It would be a global cataclysm. I don't think we should describe it anything but that. It is a major part of the global climate system, and it would have all sorts of impacts across the world. Let me just give you one example. It would severely disrupt all tropical monsoons. So we're seeing a situation in which that critical weather pattern, the monsoon in places across Africa and across Asia and India and so on, they would be dangerously disruptive, and the knock-on consequences for billions of people would be severe.
We will be right back with more on AMOC collapse and climate security in the UK with Laurie Leybourne. Then it's off to Ireland. Stay tuned.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.
This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
You are tuned to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. Our guest is UK researcher, author, and strategist Laurie Leybourne. He led the latest report, The Security Blind Spot. Well, new to me in your report, you find a subset of the AMOC current that is also vulnerable to weakening or even stopping. Please introduce us to the SPG, the subpolar gyre.
So this, as you say, is a part of that conveyor belt of the AMOC, and it's a part of it where the water sinks deep. The technical term is deep convection in the North Atlantic subpolar gyre, but scientists call the potential for this to break down, they call it SPG collapse, to echo the AMOC collapse. And the evidence shows that this subset of the AMOC could collapse, it could break down far sooner, and indeed far quicker than the overall AMOC collapse. And there is growing evidence to show that the risk of that is pretty high at this moment.
Yes, but the SPG is extremely large, a whirlpool hundreds of miles away from the coast of the UK or Ireland, and part of it swirls near Labrador, Canada. How can that affect weather and agriculture in the UK?
It's because it is a key part of that process that balances the whole regional climate across the North Atlantic region. So it's a crucial part of that process by which heat is brought up and released over that entire region that you're describing. So if it were to break down, if it were to no longer be working, it would severely disrupt the ability for that heat to exist across the North Atlantic region.
And your report warns we are flying blind on the SPG, and it may even have already tipped. And our guest scientist from Australia, Dr. Matthew England, published similar warnings about the weakening of the Antarctic overturning circulation. He said that might have tipped. I wish more scientists in the North would include this global current change in threat estimates for collapse of AMOC. Aren't they all connected?
They are all connected. And it is striking to me that there has not been the level of investment into the risk assessment of these things that is commensurate with the scale of threat that they pose. Hundreds of millions is spent by governments on risk assessing numerous things, including, say, terror threats. And I'm not contesting that, but it is clear to me that if something like SPG collapse happened, or goodness forbid, AMOC collapse happened, they would lead to far greater negative impacts than many of the threats that governments are looking at, and therefore it requires the investment to better understand the connections between them. And also the early warning systems. You pointed there to the fact that we cannot rule out that some of these systems might already have been tipped. We don't necessarily notice huge signs of that, in that we might anticipate far colder extremes to be occurring, say, in Britain and then Western Europe right now if SPG had collapsed. But the fact that we don't have the early warning systems to even know if the process has started is very concerning, to say the least. It would be equivalent to, in late 2019, as the COVID pandemic was beginning to spread globally, it would be the equivalent of us not having the early warning systems that the World Health Organization had, for example. And that's why we think it's proportionate to say we are flying blind into the threat of these ocean circulation collapses and indeed other major climate threats.
Well, these are dangerous odds of big threats, but that's not really what the UK government is telling the public so far. If I ask the Met Office, they say a collapse is an unlikely possibility. And they cite another government-funded study that reviews North Atlantic science and finds, quote, no clear overall trend in the AMOC. What do you make of officials that seem to be downplaying the AMOC threat so far?
Well, I think, and this kind of gets to the heart of the way we talk about climate risk. So I don't think that officials and many technical analysts are necessarily downplaying the threat. They are using a language that is appropriate for their particular community, that their particular community uses. So, for example, let's take another technical organization, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC. In the past, it has said, it no longer says this, but in the past, in past report, it said that the chances of an AMOC collapse occurring this century are very unlikely, and that it had medium confidence in that statement. Now, to a climate scientist, they know the technicalities of that language, but to a politician or a national security risk assessor, they don't necessarily know the subtleties there. And the subtleties are this. By very likely, what the IPCC was meaning was that there was up to a 10% chance of collapse. And by saying medium confidence, it meant, well, hang on a minute, this is highly complex. We don't necessarily have the tools to understand this in the way we might like. So we don't have huge confidence over this. But that shouldn't be reassuring, because not knowing could mean the situation is far worse. And indeed, when we do risk assessment, we might be prudent to assume it could be far worse. So there's a clash of language, a cultural context that is often missing. And that's really important to get over. A different way maybe to frame or to repeat back what the IPCC was saying then was, we cannot rule out AMOC collapse occurring this century. Or to maybe make it even better, we cannot rule out an event that could eventually lead to the loss of well over half of the growing area for the two crucial global crops underpin the global food system. So there is this sort of a lack of translation, a lack of cultural understanding between these different approaches to language and risk assessment.
But the UK government does have a climate change risk assessment. Are you saying that does not currently include any security risks?
It does include some risks we could say are related to security, things like worsening storms and heat waves and so on. The climate change assessment that is done, and we're now, the fourth edition is being worked on, is extremely useful and indeed in many ways world leading. The UK government uses it to then inform its adaptation planning and has done now for many, many years. But it is not a national security risk assessment in the sense that it looks at the overall picture of what climate change could do to the country. A good example of this is that the questions that we need to ask when it comes to those security threats are, well, what is the worst that climate change could do to our food supply? And how would that interact with geopolitics and trade and competition between China and Russia? And how might it affect the Russian-Ukraine war if there was a major food, a breadbasket shock, an extreme weather event to the food-growing areas in Ukraine? These are the kind of big security questions that, through no fault of anyone, are out of the scope of the current climate change risk assessment. So we think it's proportionate to have a more security-focused one as well to complement it. And there are instances of that happening around the world. A good example for the UK is that the Labour Party has just won the general election here. That happened in the summer. Australia's Labour Party won in 2022. And when they came into government, they commissioned two types of risk assessments for climate change. One is very similar to the British climate change risk assessment that looks at the process by which climate change will lead to flooding and storms to inform how it's going to adapt its infrastructure. But it did another one that Britain hasn't done yet, which was a national security risk assessment of climate change. And we think it's about time for Britain to do that similar exercise as well.
We know the American Pentagon studied climate threats and maybe possible climate weapons. They did this even during Republican oil-friendly governments. What about the British military establishment? Maybe are they ahead of their own government on climate security risks?
In my experience, defense departments and militaries, yes, are ahead of some parts of government. I think that's a natural consequence of their mandate, which is longer term. For example, decisions about investment in various equipment like naval ships, aircraft carriers, they are decisions that are made now but will a government will live with for decades, in some cases maybe a century, dependent on the reuse of that equipment over time, it's sold to other nations and so on and so forth. So naturally they are thinking in longer time cycles, and they also think at the strategic level of how the world and the context for their work might shift. But we have to be slightly careful about how, as we better understand the security threats of climate change and act on them, we don't just think of that through the lens of defence, which goes back to what we talked about first in this discussion, which is that in COVID, with COVID-19, things like pandemics were, of course, part of the context, the potential threats, the risks that militaries were picking up about around the world in the lead-up to COVID. But in the actual advent of COVID, militaries didn't have a huge role to play. They played an important role in Britain, like other nations. They played a logistical role, effectively a humanitarian role. They helped move equipment and ensure that the country's response was as effective as possible. But beyond that tactical role, there wasn't a huge amount they could do because it required a strategy that included public health and public finances and economic stability and on and on and on. And we have to think of the climate security threat in a similar way. We might need militaries to provide logistical support, to play a role in horizon scanning future threats. But at the end of the day, this is an economic strategy issue. This is a political and social cohesion issue, and on and on. And it's that level of security planning, a grand strategy to survive the climate crisis that we now sorely need.
Laurie, what are next steps for this alarming threat that you report, and do you hope for better with the relatively new government led by Prime Minister Starmer?
I think that government is off to a good start. It has put security and civil resilience, by that I mean the resilience of our society in the whole, at the top of its agenda. when the government came in, our public inquiry over here into the COVID-19 pandemic released a report that said similar things about COVID that we're saying about climate, to be honest, that the assessment and preparedness to the pandemic threat, that there were big gaps in what the government was doing, and there are similar gaps with climate change. And the government has said it will respond by undertaking a national review of its resilience policies. And we think that's a really good starting point for this new government to overcome the failures of previous governments. So I feel more than ever we have the opportunity to really put resilience and human and ecological security at the forefront of our approach to climate change in the UK. And that's partly because we lived through, in some ways, a dry run, a very tragic, very damaging dry run of the type of destabilising society-wide international shocks that climate could bring. That was COVID, and governments saw their shortcomings during that, and we have an opportunity to overcome them for climate change now.
Laurie, what is the Strategic Climate Risks Initiative?
This is a part of the work that we're doing around this agenda going forward. The idea of the Strategic Climate Risks Initiative, or SCRI, is to look at what we could characterise as the next chapter of the climate crisis. It is a even more difficult one. It is a chapter in which more of these security risks will manifest. It's one in which tipping point risks will grow. Some tipping points might even be triggered. And the world will increasingly head over the 1.5 degree temperature limit. That doesn't mean that we have lost, as it were. It does not mean that the climate change has overcome us or that the action is futile. In fact, the opposite. It just means that the strategic context for that work is becoming more difficult. In some ways, you could think of it like a ship heading towards a storm. The best thing to do is to change your bearing and sail around. But that didn't happen. So now the ship is in the storm. The world is in the climate crisis. And you've still got to change the bearing and sail away, but your ability to do that has to contend with the impacts of the storm on the boat. We're going to have to navigate increasingly severe climate shocks. They're already here. They will get worse. And we have to improve our ability to spot them and to make sure our societies are resilient. So ultimately, we can stay focused on decarbonising no matter what climate change throws at us. So ultimately, we manage to navigate out of the literal and figurative storm.
From the UK, we've been talking with author and strategist Laurie Leyburn. He led the new report, The Security Blind Spot, Cascading Climate Impacts and Tipping Points Threaten National Security. You can find that at www.ippr.org, ippr.org, or use the link in my own show blog at ecoshock.org. The report is really readable, and I think everyone should take a look. Laurie, thank you for sharing time and insight with our listeners.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you.
For Radio EcoShock, I'm Alex Smith. Less covered, but not less loved, Ireland is parked in the North Atlantic currents, keeping it much warmer than its latitude. In fact, Dublin is at the same latitude as Edmonton in North Alberta, Canada, 53.5 degrees north, while the average January temperature in Dublin is 5 degrees C, or 41 Fahrenheit. In January, Edmonton averages to minus 12 degrees C, or 10 Fahrenheit. Only the AMOC keeps Dublin from the bitter cold winters of northern Canada. What are media in Ireland telling their people? On RTE Radio, Philip Boucher-Hay explains expectations and impacts in Ireland.
For us, and it turns out there is a date for the tipping point, one that is in relative terms very close. It's 2057, so 33 years hence. And Philip is here. Good morning, Philip.
Good morning.
So what may happen in 2057?
Well, what will happen is frustratingly difficult to put your finger on the specifics of, but in big, broad brushstrokes, all of the calculations change for us. We're currently one of the countries, or considered to be one of the countries, that will be less badly affected by climate change. Some people have referred to us as a lifeboat island. Somewhere like New Zealand, that people would try and migrate to. But if what these scientists that you're about to hear from have got right, and nobody has proven them wrong to date, well, then all of those calculations change completely. And we're actually one of the more vulnerable nations in the world. you could put us into the sort of the category of one of those at-risk island nations like Micronesia or Tuvalu or the Marshall Islands. Because if things were to progress, just getting hotter and sea levels rising, well, then Ireland would be one of the less affected places. But there are wild cards in the pack. There are these tipping points, all of which have a cascading effect and can accelerate this whole process. And the one tipping point that is most immediately of concern to us is the slowing down, the eventual stopping of the overturning circulation in the Atlantic. I've seen one estimate that was to say that if we were to turn off that overturning circulation tomorrow, just like that, that waters at the equator would become 20 degrees Celsius warmer and waters at the northern latitudes would become 20 degrees Celsius colder, effectively iced over, polar ice caps extending right the way down into northern Europe. Some people say that there will be a hell of a lot more rain. Others say our northern shores could ice over. Some people say that we would be talking about minus 5 degrees in summer, minus 10 degrees in winter. I think it's safe to say, though, it's going to become chaotic, an awful lot more chaotic. Producing food here is going to have to change. How we build our homes, how we heat our homes, how we transport ourselves around the country, all would change, and would change within relatively short order.
Okay, so the scientists behind this research that Minister Eamon Ryan was talking about and that you've examined now, they tried to pinpoint this date when this might happen.
Somebody in the European Commission, in their wisdom, decided that it would be good to try and be a little bit more accurate about this date. It would be helpful. So 50 scientists from around Europe were gathered together to look at all of the tipping points, the permafrost, the Arctic ice, Greenland ice sheet and AMOC, the overturning circulation. It actually threw back dates that were much closer to where we are now. And there was one date that just kept on coming up again and again and again, 2057, just 33 years from now, a point where your children and my children would probably have children of their own who would be in national school. So it really is, in geological terms, the blink of an eye.
Text today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
That was Philip Boucher-Hayes on RTE, Irish Public Radio, on September 13th, 2024. The projection of AMOC tipping by 2057 comes from new science led by René van Westen in the Netherlands. Published in Science Advances in February 2024, the title is Physics-Based Early Warning Signals Shows AMOC is on Tipping Course. In addition to his 2057 prediction, René van Westen clearly explains how Atlantic current weakening or even collapse would add up to a meter, 3 feet, of sea level rise to North Europe and UK coasts. That's on its own, on top of rising seas already expected from warming and glacier melt. This is amazing and new. Here is René van Westen, PhD candidate at Utrecht University, interviewed by researcher and presenter Dave Borlas on his popular YouTube show called Just Have a Think.
Trigger the AMOC tipping event in the future. So we don't know when this happens, but when this happens, the AMOC starts to decline. And we've seen acceleration in its decline. And this takes about 100 years to go from the current state to a collapse state. And over this 100-year period, the global climate starts to shift. The AMOC actually carries a lot of heat towards northwestern Europe. And without this heat transport, northwestern Europe cools quite dramatically. This can be up to 10 degrees Celsius in some regions for northwestern Europe. If you consider particular months, for example, the February months, it can go down to minus 40 degrees Celsius over a 100-year period. So that is really spectacular, but also very worrying, of course. You also get a shift in your tropical rain bands. And in particular, what was very interesting was the Amazon rainforest region, where you saw that the seasonality completely swapped around, meaning that the wet season became the dry season and vice versa. So these are, of course, from a physical point of view, very fascinating and spectacular. But from a societal point of view, they are very worrying because society cannot adapt to such rapid changes, because 100 years may sound like a very long time, but for typical climate timescales, but also on societal timescales, it's very hard to adapt. We already having trouble adapting to the current climate change of about 0.2 degrees Celsius warming per 10 years, per decade. And then only for Northwestern Europe, you can see some regional cooling, while the global mean surface temperature increased by about 2 degrees Celsius. But this gives these very big temperature contrasts. On the one hand, you're getting very cold winters, but the summer temperatures are still substantially higher. So the seasonality increases for Northwestern Europe. A potential or an AMOC collapse also gives 1 meter of sea level rise in the North Atlantic Ocean.
I read sea level rise, or I think I heard Stefan Ramsdorf say it at a recent event, and I couldn't quite understand why that happened. So if you can explain that, that would be very helpful.
Yeah, so if you go, you're located, of course, in the UK, and if you go to the sea, it looks like a flat surface, right? But actually, there are a lot of slopes, but they are stretched like over 100 kilometers, so you don't see a very big slope across the Atlantic Ocean. But there is this substantial slope, and this slope is linked to the current strength. If this current or the strength of the circulation collapses or reverses, then also the slopes need to adjust. And this adjustment of these slopes across the ocean surface that gives this additional sea level rise of 1 meter. So actually the sea level is redistributed across the globe. So only looking at temperature is simply just rushing through all the results and just only selecting a temperature, while you also need to consider precipitation, sea ice, winter storms, more extremes, additional sea level rise due to an AMOC collapse. So the list goes on. And that is only for Northwestern Europe. Then also take a look, for example, at the Amazon rainforest, where you see this shift. The Southern Hemisphere starts to warm even faster under an AMOC collapse, triggering more melt over Antarctica, destabilizing the ice sheet over there.
That was Rene Van Westen on Just Have a Think on YouTube with Dave Borlas. This Radio EcoShock program is not a Halloween horror show merely to get attention. If we are lucky, the AMOC or its subcurrent may only weaken. I have included cautions and doubts. Great Britain may remain great, but this invasion of cold gets more likely with every ton of carbon, indeed every gallon or liter of gas or petrol burned. Nothing in our history or psyche has prepared us for this big climate twist. It's climate action now, or we lose it all. We're out of time in more ways than one. Find a lot more notes and links to follow up in my show blog. I also include links to my previous interviews with many scientists on the AMOC collapse. I'm Alex Smith. I care about you and our world. Thank you for listening.
Boiling waters flowing north, carrying fish and birds and whales. Boiling waters for a kingdom and neighbors poor. From the lowlands to Scandinavia, Gulf Stream waters, nature gives, protecting climate where we live. What if the current stops? Our green and pleasant land freezes over. If the current stops, why? Canada, why is Scotland not frozen over? That may end if the current stops. If the North Atlantic goes amok, if the ice melt chases away gifts from the Caribbean, come and stays, we must move away. If the car
If the current stops, if the current stops, if the current stops.